The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live.
Politically incorrect.
Incorrect. This is Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on TNT Radio.
And hello and welcome again to Politically Incorrect. I'm Mike Tennessee. I'm here with my dear old friend, Richard Carson. And again, we have a person who is no stranger to this program, a wonderful man, Alistair Pope, a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, who emigrated from Glasgow, Scotland to Perth, Western Australia in 1964. He graduated as a second lieutenant in 1967 and served in Vietnam, Indonesia, and Papua New Guinea, and as a subunit commander in the 3rd Brigade in Townsville, that's in North Queensland in Australia. After 20 years of military service, he retired from the Australian Army, that was in 1986. He then founded his own business working internationally as a project manager until he actually finally retired in 2016, although I don't think there's any sign of him really retiring. He's published more than 200 articles on military matters in 10 different magazines, including a title called The Coming War in the South China Sea, which he presented to the Royal United Services Institute in Melbourne back in 2021 and published in Modern Warfare. He's also written The Rise and Fall of ISIS, presented to 4 organisations and with versions published in a number of different magazines. The first print of Alistair's commercially available book of short stories was published in 2021. As I said, he's no stranger to this program. Richard, it's so nice to see you too. You'd like perhaps like
well,
to lead
I could
some
I could almost go the other way, Mike, and say it's nice to see you because you travel around more than half of this globe quite regularly. But welcome, Alistair, and I welcome your commentary today because the Australian government, along with the British and United States structure, have joined hands or something or other for a structure called AUKUS. We seem to have signed up for, I would have called it the good, the bad, and the ugly. But perhaps you could kindly tell us, for the eye-watering price that we've signed up for, whether we are the good, the bad, and the ugly. Am I wrong, or can you elucidate, have we got it right, or is this another French nuclear subs fiasco?
No, you've done very well, actually. It is ugly. I don't know about the other two things that you had, the good and the bad, but it's certainly ugly. By the way, one of the things that amazes me is how well it's been received by the pundits in the mainstream media, that this is a wonderful deal that we've done, that it's resolved all our problems of being virtually defenseless. And I really find that quite extraordinary because they're not analysed at all. Okay. What I'll cover for you today, if you don't mind, is what's wrong. I'll actually mention what's right with it first, which is very little. So that'll be a fairly short segment, and then I'll go into what's wrong with it.
Good. That's what we want to hear.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, what we're going to do is quite extraordinary. We currently have the Collins class, which was due to be retired in 2026. Now, it was then stated we'll have to do some upgrades, you know, a few billion here or there. And then we'll be able to run it through until about 2034 and maybe keep a couple of them going until about 2040. They're still a conventional submarine, and they're now getting quite long in the tooth. Now, those upgrades will certainly keep it capable. I mean, it will go to the bottom and sink or something, but it's really reached the end of its life. So what we're going to do is we're going to try and purchase or lend lease type of arrangement with the Americans to have a couple of Virginia-class submarines come out to basically Perth and trip around the Indian Ocean there as our representatives. So that means that we will maintain them, we will pay for them, and we will partially crew them. So that means we'll have 2 submarines. So we're only able to sort of managed to get crews onto about a couple, maybe 3 submarines at any given time out of the 6 that we have. So they have a crew of 58, really 42, but there was an analysis done by one ex-admiral who pointed out that part of the problem we were having was that with a crew of 42, the people were exhausted. Some of them were working 20-hour days. and then getting a 4 or 5 hour sleep and then having to go back to work again. So they increased the crew to 58, which actually solved one problem but created another, because if you've only got three crews already, you now actually effectively have two. Second thing, as it was pointed out, was that because each submarine was supposed to have a minimum of three crews, and that was put out right at the beginning. We've never been able to do that. So what it means is that if you're a submariner, you're basically at sea all the time, and the view is not that good from a submarine, I can assure you. So for the people who actually are submariners, they're resigning in great numbers. So we now have to actually try and get possibly people from the US or the UK come out and be our submariners and help us out, because we simply can't crew them with Australians. But that's the Collins. It's struggling, and it's now going to have to be extended, because we're not going to get the first of the Virginia class probably, and everyone will be very optimistic about it. So you'll get them in 2040. You won't.
When 2040?
2040. I mean, I don't mind. I'll only be 95, so I'll be too old to be a sailor.
you won't get enlisted.
Right, I won't get enlisted. and my children will probably be too old by then too. But the point is that...
So our enemies will wait till then, won't they?
Oh, yes. Oh, we've got our diplomatic feelers for that.
Yeah, good. Keep going.
Yeah. The issue there is that... we can't get them by 2040. 2045 is the minimum. And the reason being, and you can look up open websites, it tells you that the Americans are building basically two a year. And they to get to their target number that they want, including they're into block three, block four, and they're looking at block five. So block five is so different from block one. It's like a Model T Ford compared to a Lamborghini. So they'll have to go back and revise the old ones if they're going to keep them going. And it means actually the earliest we could have one is possibly 2045. It means if we get two, and it actually says in the deal that we could in fact have three, and we might need another two, which would give us five Virginia class, but we can't crew them. And even if we can, we have to send people over to the US to become part of a mixed crew. Because there's no way the Americans are going to hand over the submarine with all its weaponry and its systems and say, well, here we go. You can have this and, let us know when you're ready for the next one. So there'll always be mixed crews, but that means about 2045 to 2055 before we get the Virginia class. Now, this is where UCAS comes in, or AUKUS.
AUKUS.
Whatever. This is when it comes in, because under the deal that we've got there, the AUKUS is not due to come until vaguely the mid-2040s. Now, the AUKUS is interesting in that it doesn't exist. It's a barracuda. One of the admirals in Australia, and I've got his name here, but I won't mention him. Why embarrass him? Who said actually that the design of the new submarine to replace the Astute is 70% complete. Now, you just have to look at what happened to the Collins. It was complete 4 years late. Actually, the first one was delivered on time. It just couldn't dive, didn't have any weapons, and had a number of things missing from it. So it was all right for pushing around or towing it around Sydney Harbour, but not for much else for about 3 years. So anyway, we eventually got that. And then we discovered it was so noisy that you could hear it when you're on shore, stand in South Head and listen to it going by. So there was a big noise problem, there was a cavitation problem, there was a number of other problems. It was 8 years after that it actually became an effective submarine. So when somebody tells me the design is 70% complete, when we have not nominated what the combat system is going to be, how we're actually what it's actually designed to do, I don't know how you can actually design that. I'm sure you know, Richard.
I actually don't, because I think the most boats I've ever played with were in the bathtub when I was about five. So
that's a problem. Even if it's 70% designed now, we know that the Barracuda was going years and years behind schedule, turning a nuclear sub into a conventional submarine. Now we're going to take the British nuclear submarine, the Astute, which is finished its build of seven. Actually, the last two are being built now. And they were only going to have seven. And now they're actually designing the other one, which actually will be available about the mid-2040s. But the Brits are going to take the first one. So they can only build two at a time in Barrow and Furness. There's no room to build any more than that. Now, the Americans could, in fact, increase and start building, say, four a year, probably using Somali immigrants or something, because where are you going to get the skilled people who can actually do this sort of build? Maybe they'll hire them off the French. But the point there is that you can't simply say, I'm going to go to build four a year. You don't have the skills available. We don't have the skills in Australia. No, we let them go. And so now we're faced with, we're going to have a third submarine. Now, if you want to take something simple and make it seriously complex, this is how you do it. And then, of course, what we'll need is project management teams for each one of these. Now, they have to be supervised, and because you've got a project management team to design the T-shirts and the coffee cups, and they'll have a coordinating committee over the top, and then someone will sit on top of that. And he'll have to be at least a vice admiral.
Where the employment will really blossom, I suspect, in that.
Oh, yes, yes,
in,
yes.
In that slightly different area.
The point there is that the first submarine, Rishi in England has basically said, oh, we'll take a couple of them, and then the next one you can have it. And by that stage, we'll have the skills, and we'll send out some people to Australia. By that stage, you'll have been able to dredge the Torrens River or something.
Move your microphone a bit. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I moved to one side, it disappears. Yeah. So we'll have to build the facilities out there. And he said, then you can start actually building them in Australia. And so that's the plan. They're going to build the first one in the UK and then come out here and build the other ones in Australia, in South Australia. And I said,
where's the skilled labor if we're going to try and build one here? Or they bring it in from England, is that the idea? Or I thought we were going to employ our own people.
No. They're actually in kindergarten right now. All we have to do is train them up from there.
Starting to build submarines, right? Okay.
Yeah. This is 2023. They're not going to be. They're not going to start building.
25-30 years.
Hey, Alistair, what parts of this story have anything that's positive about it?
Mike, did you want?
Let me go back a page here and see if I can find what I wrote that said what's right with it.
Are these subs that are going to be built in the next 20, 30 years or so, which is going to be great, are they in any way a replica of the French fiasco that's already obsolete?
Oh, yeah. We've got history in creating chaos, and our experience with the French subs is perfect for what we're doing now.
So we're replicating what we've just gone through. Well, Mike, this is a bloody disgrace. We're going to replicate what we've already had a crack at. I think we lost about 9 or 10 billion there and ended up with a glass of water, I think, but I could be wrong.
No, probably champagne.
Champagne, good, a bottle. So now we've gone around the world and blown ourselves up, so to speak, and puffed up our egos, and we've been sold another pup, but our spectacular media don't appear to be able to discern what you're telling us.
No, there are a couple of people. Tom Lewis actually has been very critical right from the beginning. There's a couple of others too, but most people actually seem to have swallowed the Kool-Aid.
Okay.
This is going to save us. I said it's the answer to all of these things. I don't get it, because you only have to look at it for 2 minutes and say, we're struggling to maintain the Collins-class submarine, so we're going to add another one, completely different one that's nuclear-powered. We're going to have a joint crew on it until we get ours trained up. They'll never hand over the whole thing. And then we're going to have a third submarine come along there. I mean, we're going to have three submarines.
We can't manage two. We can't manage one, and we're going to add two more complications to the game plan.
Yes.
Should go well.
What could go wrong?
Every time I talk with you, I don't know why we even bother to try to have a defense department, because we appear to be that inept and that ignorant and that gullible. It's frightening that we, but this is the number I thought I heard was 350 billion.
It's going to be more than that. But yeah, start off that as a petty cast.
Before we,
the fallacies about all this is that we're not told that it's a stupid system. I mean, we're not told about all the problems that you've been telling us about, Alistair.
But they're blindingly obvious.
Well, yeah, but the general public is not being told here. I don't know what it's like in other parts of the world about things of this nature, but our press don't have any idea what the reality is.
This is pretty serious crap. Should we go to a quick ad break and come back and just...
I think we need to, because we've got a lot more to discuss.
I'm going to go and get a glass of arsenic so I can recover.
Hemlock.
You're still drinking that, are you, Richard?
You should hear what Hesher, CeCe, and John are talking about on State of the Nation.
Booty.
The bond rating agency, right?
Yeah, exactly. So tell me a little bit about their downgrading the entire U.S. banking system outlook to negative. What does that mean, considering everything that's gone on this week?
They're right. The banking sector is weaker than people thought just a month ago, or heck, even a week ago. What's happened is that a lot of banks, they behaved in a certain way during the ultra-low interest rate environment when the Federal Reserve was doing its easy money policies. Now that easy money approach by the Fed gave us inflation, that's leading to higher interest rates as they try to slam on the brakes after stepping on the gas. And that's made the banking sector vulnerable, especially if they didn't properly hedge against some of the risks they were taking, which of course explains a lot about what happened to the Silicon Valley Bank.
State of the Nation on TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Not the station for people who label truth as misinformation just because they don't like it.
For facts and truth.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And you're with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on Politically Incorrect, and our special guest today, tonight, tomorrow, yesterday, wherever you may be in the world, is Alistair Pope. Now, Alistair, I want to move on to another topic, and Richard will help me out here. We've been talking about AUKUS, which, of course, is the something that involves us in Australia, the US, and the United Kingdom. But North Korea have been making a lot of noise about a different type of orca or orcas. What's your thought about that? They're nuclear, aren't they?
No, they're
claiming.
The current orcas have been under development since about 2000. It does take that long to take something, and they're actually unmanned underwater vehicles that run on AI, artificial intelligence. They've got the US Navy has now purchased the first six of them, and they set them off and they set them tasks, and the orca itself then decides how to solve that problem. And so if it's set off to, say, attack a convoy, which can be done because it's got torpedoes and it's got mines and it's got other things, and it will go off and do that. And if it gets detected and actually comes under threat, it can actually destroy itself. Now, that's a very bad thing to do if you happen to have a manned submarine with 58 Australians on board. Very depressing for them to head off to the depths. So the orcas actually are the future. I see them as the future of what's actually going to happen to warfare just about everywhere. I mean, this morning I was actually watching a couple of videos about Ukraine, because there's another person coming out saying Ukraine's on its last legs, and a British general came out and said Russia's on his last legs, so one of them has to be on their last legs. Anyway, the point there is that robotics and AI are moving at such a speed that the battlefield is changing. So if I was here in 1919 and someone asked me, what's the battlefield going to look like in 1939? There were a number of clues, and a number of people got it right, basically the Germans, and the British actually ignored it, even though Liddell Hart and a couple of other people like Fuller were actually probably even equal to or better than the Germans in planning what the future battlefield would look like. But nobody asked them. And he still ended up as Captain Basil Liddell Hart. He didn't get promoted. He wasn't singing to the right sheet of music. And one of his things was that we got to get rid of horses. And, of course, the head of the cavalry corps said, absolutely not. We need horses. That's how we do our reconnaissance. So we still had horses in the British Army up until 1940. And the Polish actually were still charging the enemy with horses, and the enemy was sitting in tanks with machine guns.
Probably didn't work.
It didn't go well.
No.
Tell me what the battlefield is going to look like in 2045. Tell me it's going to be the same as like German submarines and wolf packs hunting down convoys of Chinese ships coming here. It's not going to happen. So if you were then to sort of plan the battlefield, I would not be looking particularly at submarines. And the reason being, for anyone to come to Australia, short of being Indonesians, they've got to come through some very narrow gaps. If I can cover those with long-range artillery, air power, and missiles, then I don't have to worry about somebody turning up in Sydney Harbour and taking it over directly, because they'll never get here. And we're putting all our money into all our money and resources into a maximum of 8 submarines.
But we can't man, occupy, or work. We won't have the knowledge. But you're right. And we're spending billions of dollars for something that will be completely and utterly useless if it goes at all in 25 years' time.
Well, see, there's a great book on this actually, which I read. And back in the 1950s, the Americans, and I don't know which branch it was, actually did an examination of this and pointed out the Germans were the epitome of submarine warfare. Yet they lost 643 submarines in 30 months. That's 2 submarines every 3 days and the crew. They had the highest, 75% of the crews went to the bottom. Now, take that into account. So the Americans went, submarines are obsolete. But then people like Rickover came up with the idea, no, they're not obsolete. They just have to change their role. They can't go out hunting down in wolf packs. They can't go down hunting down convoys. There are 300 ships heading for Australia from China. I wonder what they're coming from. It's all full of tourists, I'm sure. We need to do something about this. Now, if we went out and sent out submarines, we would lose them. They might get 1 or 2 or 3 or 4, but that would be it. We have to deal with this a different way. Now, you've got the Lombok Straits, you've got Torres Straits, you've got all of these things where we can actually block them coming through. Now, I don't know if you know about HIMARS. The HIMARS actually is the new weapon that everyone's cheering on about. It actually has what's called guided artillery, meaning that when you fire the round and somebody moves, you can actually get that to change direction and hit the target anyway. Now, how good is that?
Well, it's pretty
well. It's good if you're a bad shot.
Right?
Very good if you're a bad shot.
Well, that's right. And of course, you don't even have to be a good shot anymore, because you can then guide an artillery shell. We used to, send out artillery and just keep blasting the area until we sort of pounded it into submission. Now you can actually one shot, one kill. And that's because you can actually change the direction of the artillery round to hit the target you actually want. I was watching some of those this morning. Now, there's a new weapon. By the way, it's been around for about 20 years, and the Singaporeans bought them, and we finally got the idea that it might be a good idea. So we've ordered 9 of them.
But where do we have to have those, though, Alistair? Shouldn't we have them somewhere else rather than here?
Where?
Well, I'm going to say Indonesia or Papua.
No, they've got a long range. Yeah. You can actually fire them. Right now, you can fire them up to about 60 to 100 kilometers. And okay. The new ones that are coming out are rocket assisted, and they can go even further.
Right.
The hypersonic missiles, which we're going to build in Australia. Of course, we're going to build it in the old Ford factory. Nothing's happened. No money's been allocated. No one's actually tooling up to actually do this. But the political statement was made. We're going to build hypersonic missiles in Australia. Hey, solve the problem. Move on. I mean, this is the thing. No one's actually sort of looking at each of these and actually following up to make sure we're getting what we want. No one's defining how we're going to fight this next war, which is why we're buying World War II submarines.
Well, that's what's worrying me. That's why I certainly did ask, come and explain what we've done. We've already said and had the big press conferences, but we appear to have bought lemons by the dozen without much point or thought about it. Because another thing I said, well, shouldn't we have orcas and surface to air missiles. And you quickly pointed out to me, good idea, but they're not fast enough because the missiles that our enemy may well have can move at a much greater speed than the missiles we might acquire. Are their missiles of defensive capacity sharp enough to pull up an incoming tactical missile? I don't know. I think you said
not at the moment. Hypersonic missiles are just too fast. They come in about 5 Mach or 7 Mach, and they tell me there's one actually flies at about 9,000 kilometers, which is a bit hard to hit. It's a bit hard to even detect. But I can assure you that probably within 2 years, someone will actually have come up with something that takes those out. But every weapon is a counter. Armor got thicker in the middle edges, and then along came the crossbow, which could pierce armor. So we thickened up again, and then...
And you couldn't walk.
That was a musket.
And you fell off a horse, and you were stuck there for the day and the month.
Yeah, you couldn't get up.
But if we were to come back to that missile angle, we've got to be thinking that the stuff's coming at us from a different, speed and whatever else.
Yeah.
And we've got submarines that won't be able to do anything. We've made a commitment for $350 billion or some ridiculous amount, and yet we're going up down the wrong road 100%.
I think so, but that's just my opinion, given that if I had $380 billion, I could probably do more useful things with it than actually buy these submarines, which are very expensive and not particularly useful.
Just on that deal, are we getting other bits and pieces of equipment in that $380 billion, or is it mainly allocated towards a submarine that, by all accounts, will be a useless piece of kit
that's just the defense budget for the submarines.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if you want other things, like we've been making the decision as to whether or not we'll buy the Redback, or I've forgotten the name of the other one, armored artillery. Mm. Self-propelled armored artillery. We've been making that decision now for 8 or 9 years, and we still haven't quite made it, but we're tending towards the Korean version with modifications. Of course, we must have modifications. I mean, nothing the Koreans can build could possibly meet Australian standards. But the alternative was that we're also looking at the British, the German version. So 8 years of indecision, it will be obsolete before we buy it. This is actually a repeated pattern. But by the way, I want to just go back to what I said there and very quickly point out, when the Americans actually found out that submarines chasing convoys wasn't going to work anymore, they came up with the idea, well, there's two things we can do. We can use our submarines to kill enemy submarines, which is the attack submarine, and they're designed specifically to kill enemy submarines. And they used to follow the Russians around. One would be allocated to follow them around. They had a couple of collisions when the Russians stopped.
They bumped into each other. No tail lights?
No tail lights.
So that
was one thing. But the second thing was, of course, they then came up with the mad idea, which was we'll arm our submarines and pack them somewhere with nuclear missiles that will completely destroy everything. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Neville Shute wrote the movie On the Beach.
Yeah,
and Australia.
That was a fair while ago. So that was obviously being thought about then. That mightn't have been a good idea either.
No, it was a good idea.
Oh, wasn't it?
What you had was mutually assured destruction, and that was the idea.
Everyone went away.
The Americans went one step further, because what they did was they said it's not going to be mutually assured. You hit us, and we're going to destroy you, and you won't get us because our submarines, our attack submarines, will destroy your submarines before they can fire.
All right.
You won't be able to get us, so we'll be able to fire and we'll destroy you. So it was still a bit of a, still wasn't sort of equally mutually assured. But the point there was there was a role for submarines, killing other submarines or destroying an enemy country using nuclear weapons.
How long ago was that vogue idea and had some degree of being successful? 20 years?
No, that came up in the 1950s.
Oh, right, I beg your pardon.
So by the 1960s, they were building a huge number of nuclear attack submarines that could then cruise somewhere in the North Atlantic, not be seen, not be found. And then if they didn't get, you might have heard of the Omega system. There's one station down here in Victoria. There's another one at Exmouth. It broadcasts 24 hours a day. If it goes offline, then the idea was that the nuclear submarines would fire their weapons. Well, that's very important to keep them online.
That's bloody comforting, isn't it?
Yes.
Look, when you elucidate me with what the facts are versus the kindness of the Defence Department and our government to tell us bugger all and our media not to know anything, I don't feel as comfortable at night as I did the night before taking a little Shiraz.
Well, I mean, the government has high-fived itself in that we've solved the problem that the Conservative government didn't solve in 10 years. I mean, they bumbled around there, but just like that, 2021, we started discussing it. By 2022, we had a deal, and now we've solved the whole problem by 2050.
Yeah, okay. Well, but we haven't solved that. We're acquiring a product that will be completely and utterly useless.
Yes.
So whatever we're doing, we've got to go scrap the whole conventional structure as we know it right now and start with something. You mentioned it before, artificial intelligence defence structure. I don't think Australia's that fussed on going and taking anyone over. I don't like, we can barely play cricket. I don't think we'll do too well somewhere else. We want to stay here. We don't want some other bugger coming along giving us a hurry up with a broomstick. So we've got to find a way that we do that sensibly and successfully. And what we appear to have on this AUKUS program doesn't fit the bill anywhere.
No.
Nil.
No.
Nil by mouth.
No. I mean, the other thing was I spent the morning actually with knowing I was coming on here. Mm. I looked through all of the the Australian fleet, to see what's operational and what isn't. And it's almost non-operational.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, just look it up. Look up the Australian Navy. Just look up Australian Navy fleet, and you'll get this list. And it's got currently being upgraded, not quite ready, under construction, being planned. I mean, we've got a few, mainly patrol boats, which, of course, had to downgrade the weapon because they were getting too heavy, so we moved them down to 30-millimeter weapons instead of 50 cal.
So what does that shoot, crows or something?
Other fishing boats.
Fishing boats. Oh, good, right.
So, I mean, we've got a few of those for coastal patrols, but and we've got 6 frigates, and we've got 3 air warfare destroyers, and we've got the 2 landing helicopter docks with the larger ship, 24,000 tons. Compare that to, say, Quantum of the Seas at 240,000 tons.
Quantum of the Seas, that's a cruise ship, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, but it can take 6,000 passengers, and, you know, we could fit 10 of our biggest Navy ships into it.
Should we swap?
Depends where you want to go. No, but the point there is, and of course, one of the senators actually asked them, well, if it's too heavy and you've still got the same propulsion, can it keep up with the less of the fleet? And I was absolutely amused when the Admiral said, well, we'll find out when we've launched them. So apparently we don't have anyone that can calculate how fast they can go because they're going to be lower in the water.
Well, they will go slower.
Oh, yeah.
If he wants to know, I'll give him that bit of my advice.
Yeah, yeah. So
unless you put a much bigger motor in it, and then it'll be too heavy, so it won't go. This sounds like Catch 22 to me.
It is.
Or Yes, Minister,
We modified it by adding armour and other things to it that actually then made it too heavy. So it was now low in the water, but we can't upgrade the propulsion system because that would make it either lighter.
So we'll get the weaponry off it.
That's the best thing. That's what we did. We reduced the weaponry on it.
And what, slingshots with rubber bands or something
That'd be ridiculous. Slingshots can hurt people. We don't actually want to hurt anyone.
Yes, you mentioned that to me. We've now got a new rule that we mustn't do any damage to someone with our weaponry. And it's interesting. I see in the press now we're going to start charging ex-SAS soldiers who are out on the front line because they were naughty and hurt someone. I mean, we can touch on that as well, but so far you've filled me with zero confidence that we're across the game.
Okay, let me just move on to Robert Gottlieb's area of expertise. I'll run across him a little bit here. Because when you look at the cost, we now have to maintain the Collins capability for another 20 years beyond its planned date. So there was no budget and no funding for that. So now we're going to keep that going beyond 2026 to about 2045. I make that about 20 years. We need to buy and maintain the Virginia class at the same time. Now, they are not cheap to run. And we have no nuclear capability in Australia, so they're going to need new facilities, probably somewhere north of Perth, which means building the whole thing from scratch. We're going to possibly end up with, we're going to get two. The contract says that we could have a third one when they can spare one. And then we need to pay for the design engineers. And by the way, you might have seen there that when Rishi Sunak was there with our Prime Minister, who was gushing on about the fact we now have a very close relationship with the British.
That's good, isn't it? We've never had that before, ever.
No, it's completely different.
We'll just cut for a break and be back in a moment, Alistair.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
What happens to a person who tweets out that homosexuality is invading the church? Well, if your 37-year-old Christian theology lecturer, Dr. Aaron Edwards at the Methodist-run Cliff College in England, you get fired. According to the Christian Post, Edwards, who has worked there for 7 years, told the Telegraph he was also threatened with a counter-terrorism referral by the school. Here's what he tweeted. Homosexuality is invading the church. Evangelicals no longer see the severity of this because they're busy apologizing for their apparently barbaric homophobia, whether or not it's true. This is a gospel issue, he said. And for that, the father of five got the boot for what the school called misconduct, which had brought the institution into disrepute. He argued that maintaining an evangelical stance was crucial for the institution's student base and heritage. Dr. Edwards is currently considering legal action and appealing his termination with support from Christian Concern. He also set up a crowdfunder where he's asking people to contribute if they wish. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Several Soros-backed DAs are facing recall petitions, including George Gascon, DA of crime-riddled Los Angeles, and Pariza Degani-Tafti from Arlington County and City Falls of Church, Virginia. Steve DeSano of Fairfax County, Virginia, elected in 2019, endorsed a progressive platform typical of the left-wing DA faction, making official policy not to prosecute more than 20 different crimes, including shoplifting for goods under $1,000, prostitution, and indecent exposure. Loudoun County District Attorney Bhuta Bibaraj, who championed anti-incarceration, made headlines for personally seeking jail time for Scott Smith, a father who was arrested for misdemeanor disorderly conduct at Loudoun County School Board meeting while protesting the school board's cover-up of his 14-year-old daughter's rape in a school bathroom. Bibaraj is now facing a recall petition.
If you're talking about it,
we have seized enough fentanyl to kill every man, woman, and child in the entire United States of America.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back. This is Politically Incorrect. I'm Mike Tennessee. My dear old friend Richard Carson is with me. And this afternoon, this morning, tomorrow, yesterday, wherever you may be in the world, you'll know that we have a special guest, Alistair Pope, who's no stranger to this program because he's always got something interesting to talk about. And today he's really getting stuck into the Defence Department in Australia, and it sounds as though he's got good reason to. Now, Alistair, I remember you saying once before that some of the head charangs in the Defence Department keep talking about climate change as being our most serious danger. Is that serious? Is that real?
This all started with Admiral Barry, but he's still got a lot of influence there, apparently. But just before we came on, I just checked up, and I was actually looking to see if they were still doing this. And there's I won't tell you the name of it, but it's an Army development site, which actually cites the real concerns of the Army. And the first two that I brought up there when I put in climate change was, one was written in 2023, which is this year, I believe. Mm. And it actually was discussing the fact that we're not prepared to fight the climate, and that this is a failing of the ADF.
I tell you what, we might as well have a crack at that because you've got bugger all chance elsewhere. Just we'll be able to turn the wind around for sure. That'll help.
See, this is indoctrination. This is not what these guys are designed to do.
No.
They're not interested in defending Australia. They're interested in things like climate change. Because if you say the right words, that's what will get you up the ladder.
Up the totem pole to a bigger paycheck.
Yep. Bigger bill. Well, let's face it. I mean, Campbell gets $100,000 a month.
You're joking?
No.
Jesus.
A year. And he's commanding what compared to the other armies in the world?
Nothing.
And we've got a huge, we've almost got a South American level of generals in the army now. I did look it up a couple of weeks ago and was horrified to see the numbers that had doubled some when we had 600,000 in the military in World War II. But we've now got four times as many generals and about a quarter the size of the world, not even a quarter the size, 15% of the size of the World War II army.
Oh, God. But we're concentrating on the climate.
Oh, yeah.
And subs that don't, may not play.
And diversity.
Diversity. Give me a lowdown.
What's
on diversity?
What's diversity? Is that where one sub goes one way and the other sub goes a different way?
I think
way?
It's the people in them.
No, it's the people in them, actually. There was a study done, actually, and it was found the number of combat-style officers objected to putting the LGBT flag on their signature block, their military signature block, by the way. And several of them were removed from the army.
Well, that's fair. I mean, that's disgraceful. I can't believe that they would object to LGBTQ information.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
It's Larry, Graham, Brian, Terry, LGB, and a few other of his mates, I assume.
QWERTY on the end.
QWERTY's on the end.
So anyway, that's one of the issues there. There's a couple of other things that brought in too. You've got people now, you know, they've actually said at Duntroon, you can't call people, him or her. You have to work out what the personal pronoun is. And you're not never to mention anyone's sort of actual sex and say, hey, you,
Excuse me.
I know you're a man.
Excuse me a moment, Al. So you're saying that if you are an insubordinate person in the armed forces, you can't call a more senior person or officer, sir?
I don't know.
Or if the officer happens to be a woman, you can't call her madam.
I know that's banned, but I don't know what they actually call them.
Well,
I used to be ma'am.
That's like an Al Jolson song.
Yeah.
The point is that
we've got to get to the important things.
Yeah, no, well, this is very important because if you don't know what to call a senior officer, what do? You walk past and become completely insubordinated.
Well, you'd be out on the parade ground for a month.
I in my very junior days, I had a number of soldiers. Actually, I had to take a parade, and they all went off in different directions when I gave them orders, and they actually said it's because they couldn't understand me. So I kept them here. I kept them there for an hour in the hot sun of Brisbane out at Inaugura, while they learned to understand my language. And then I said, "If you have any doubts as to what to call me, it's sir."
Right. Well, that's good to know. But a little while ago, isn't it, Alistair?
Well, that
it's
was
not this year.
That was 1960s.
But hang on a minute. The head of the defence and others in that level of governance of our defence force are worrying about the climate rather than all the other things that might be coming our way. And then the procurement side of the whole bloody thing is buying stuff that by the time when and if we ever see it will probably be obsolete and no doubt won't be up to speed to manage what's around in 25 years' time. Won't even get close.
Absolutely. There's a whole department in the Defence Department which actually plans strategic war. And their job is to actually look at what's war going to look like in 5, 10, and 20 years, because that's the sort of procurement cycle. I don't know what they've come up with, because they seem to be, they've come out and said the climate's our biggest threat. The problem is we don't have enough diversity. And in fact, a friend of mine actually who's an ex-breeder, he was long retired now, His nephew wanted to join the army, and he was told to come back next year. We've got enough of your kind already.
And what was his kind? He wanted to get stuck in and do something?
No, white Australian male.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
So he was told to come back next year.
That's actually not allowed. I mean, technically, technically you should just employ the person that's most capable to do the job, I would have thought, no matter whether they're Kalathumpian Buddhist or otherwise. Now, that would be the normal approach, I would have thought.
At a Senate hearing, General Campbell actually said there are no quotas. And yet, right. I've got an anecdotal story from a bright guy who was a brigadier in the army saying, that's not true.
Really?
Here's my nephew, who, by the way, is a fully qualified tradesman, wanted to join the army. He wanted to do 3 or 5 years and get a bit of tour around. He's single.
Yep.
Sounds like they could do with a tradesman.
Sorry?
It sounds like they could do with a tradesman.
Yeah, for something.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, he was refused entry, was he? No,
he was just told to come back next year. No, that was last year, and he hasn't, as far as I know, he hasn't gone back.
No,
I don't think he's going to join now.
Now, we come back to our erstwhile journalists on this whole mess then. You're aware of all of this. You can run it off the top of your head without too much trouble. You know numbers, you know bloody everything, or appear to. We don't hear this in our legacy mainstream media at all, or do we get a little bit of it?
You do get a little bit.
We do.
Like I said,
I actually do know that some of the stuff you've said on this station got them thinking about orcas and drones and stuff. I'm going to say, because of what you say, something does get through.
I know, because I'll take some credit, a minor part. I wrote 3 articles in Quadrant magazine on the sinking feeling, you know, the fact that the Barracuda was a disaster, it was a farce.
Mm.
And those articles were actually given by a good friend of Robert Gottliebson to Robert Gottliebson. And we actually had a conversation about it, and he pointed out that he knew nothing about submarines. He was as wise about submarines as you are.
Oh, so, absolute dill.
Yeah. He didn't use that word, though. So what he did was rather clever, because he's a financial analyst. And so he actually looked at the numbers and discovered that everyone was lying. The original cost of the Barracuda was to be $50 billion. And it had blown out to $280 billion. And we still had nothing in sight. We've been at it for years. So he actually took his strength and said, someone's lying. Because they were talking about turned out costs, or whether or not it was fixed cost, or what it was. And so he actually used that as a weapon against them. And then suddenly, of course, Barracuda's cancelled. And we've now got Orcas, and it's solved all our problems.
Right. Well, we haven't solved anybody's problems.
Except that it's not going to be ready until 2025 at the earliest, is it?
2045.
45, Mike.
By then, they will need some tradesmen.
Well, I'll need someone with a screwdriver by the sounds of it. Alistair, I'm almost in total shock listening to our readiness for any particular structure coming our way. I think we might as well give up now and just hand them the keys, save a lot of trouble. I just wanted to quickly, while we've got a bit more time left, we've got the climate change debacle, we've got the AUKUS non-performance, we've got submarines that may or may not float, probably won't, sink straight to the ground. Everything we're doing is brilliant. But just a quick little slight change, and I know you're a bit of a sophologist or whatever you want to call it, political scientist. We're having an election today in the state of New South Wales. They would have finished by now, Mike, because they've got daylight saving time, which is a great help.
Very astute, Richard, as usual. Very astute.
Right on the money. But the conservative parties in this country, I think they need, if you can give the same incisiveness on our conservative warriors as you seem to be able to do on our defence structure, what's your thought? Where are they going wrong? They're almost not. You can't see them anymore. They're hopeless.
They're not interested.
They're not interested.
No. I mean, a friend of mine actually knows a couple of the state premiers, and or not even state premiers, opposition leaders.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say.
He actually had lunch with one who agreed with everything he said about defence, about nuclear power within Australia, about fossil fuels, about climate change. And he said, and I won't touch it.
Sorry.
I think he thinks he'll lose the green vote.
He'll never get it.
Good point. But why aren't you in politics? John was actually taken aback that the guy agreed with everything,
yeah,
and yet then said, I wouldn't touch it. But I had the same experience, actually, that I mentioned when you mentioned David Jimison, the other fellow that was on with me one time.
Yeah.
We arranged to meet with the defense minister, and then it was called off on the advice of the ADF. Don't talk to these guys
because you're going to be too controversial, or you might want to do something positive.
Yeah, and so therefore, I mean, you had plausible deniability. I never knew. No one told me because I avoid anyone who would tell me anything.
Yeah, well, just coming back to the conservative, I'm not going to try and work out how the green mind works. I do understand and for our overseas people, that's the Tories are the conservative party here, or they're the Republican party if you're in America, and they are bereft of backbone. I think that'd be a fair comment to make. And they think by acquiescing to the enemy's position, that's going to get them over the line, and it's failing every time. And I'll be interested to see if it doesn't fail in this. The state having our largest state is having its election. It's now finished because it's after 6 o'clock of their time. How they go today in that particular, I'll call it a battlefield, because I suggest they'll struggle and probably come a distant second. Maybe not. Maybe they'll have a tie for second. There is some discussion to that, but it's because you've just touched on the very point. They're not prepared to articulate or discuss or stand up and argue their point of difference.
No, quite right.
And I know you've done many things in the background, all of which are eschewed as too hard. So we've got a defence force that seems to stumble into chaos and achieve nothing. We have a mainstream media that chooses to just be acquiescent, probably because of the government paycheck, but I don't know. And we've got a political class that are too gutless to actually stand up on a stump and make a point. We're going well.
And no one's willing to. I mean, this SMR business of using small nuclear reactors.
Yeah.
I looked up some figures here. There's currently 129 nuclear-powered submarines in the world.
Right.
129. Only three have ever had accidents, and they were all Russian. To do with the nuclear systems.
Yeah.
There's 160 ships powered by 200 small to medium reactors. And that includes things like icebreakers. The Carl Vinson's got 8 alone. So you've got a hell of a lot of these things are chuffing around the world, but they're too dangerous to take out to somewhere like Alice Springs or Darwin and power that up with a nuclear reactor that has not had an accident since 1956.
And our technology and our skill set is rising by the hour. It's not a problem, not a problem, but we don't want to do it because it's got the word nuclear. But we've now suddenly tumbled into, what's his name? Albanese.
Yeah.
He's gone around and he's given a hug to that quality President Biden, and I'm not too sure about the gentleman from London, and everything's okay with it. Everything's okay with nuclear because it's one of our people, but I don't know how that's going to go when we have to start tinkering with nuclear submarines or whatever, if that's what we end up doing.
No, we will never tinker. The sealed units, all the other ones, you send them back to the manufacturer if you need to take it out for any reason. There's one that's been running in one of the British submarines, been running now for 30 years.
Okay.
And it's just about reached the end of its life in that it's expended its fuel. 30 years of chuffing around the oceans without ever refueling.
Well,
and it produced enough power to actually make them warm, give warm showers, fresh
everything.
Water.
Well, everything. Why don't we get a couple of those and whack them into every country town and reasonable-sized city all around Australia.
Well, we should.
Bloody oath, we should. And but if I stood up, and I'd be howled down, no doubt, if I said that in the polite society that I don't operate in. But I think we're getting the wind up, Alistair, and I'm going to say thank you for your clear observations of what we haven't got for the next 40 years. Mike, I might go and find somewhere in Calathumbian Buddhist land and put the flag on a little island somewhere.
I'm going to find some isotopes. Now, Alistair, thanks again. Great afternoon to have you again. And we look forward to seeing you again sometime in the future. Okay. So, everybody, wherever you are around the world, we are Politically Incorrect, and thank you for your company.
And we've had one of the best Politically Incorrect broadcasters, Lieutenant Colonel Alistair Pope, retired. You're a champion. Thanks for your time.